Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
You might remember I spoke to Paula Crotty from Caird Ireland here on Lunchtime Live last week about her late daughter's battle with an eating disorder.
And we were, I guess, fortunate enough to live in the catchment area of St. Vincent's Hospital, which has the only 3 eating disorder beds for adults in Ireland. And if you asked somebody 20 years ago, they'd have told you that there were 3 eating disorder beds in Ireland for adults. So 20 plus years later, it's still the same.
No change.
Those 3 eating disorder beds are only for the catchment area of St. Vincent's Hospital. So they're not for all of Ireland.
So what do you do if you've an eating disorder in Galway or Cork?
Well, that's the problem. And that's what we as Caird Ireland, that's what we're shouting for. And the HSE and the National Clinical Eating Disorder Programme for eating disorders, and Bernard Gloucester, the CEO of the HSE, they're all saying, well, you know, people are better off treated in an outpatient basis and they'll do better in an outpatient basis. That is true. But equally so, there isn't enough services in the outpatient services for them to do better. So they need to be admitted to inpatients.
And that was Paula, who was with us here in Lunchtime Live last week, talking about her late daughter's battle with an eating disorder and the services that were available. And after Paula spoke to us, we heard from Angela, Jean, Jane, Linda, Sean was with us too, and Francisca over the past couple of days, talking about their experience. Today, though, I'm joined in studio by consultant psychiatrist and clinical lead with the HSE Adult Eating Disorder Service in Dublin South and Wicklow and St. Vincent's Hospital. Dr. Art Malone is with me here in studio. Art, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You might just explain, first of all, Art, how is an eating disorder defined?
Well, eating disorders are a group of complex and severe mental illnesses which are characterized by persistent disturbances in eating behaviors, as well as abnormal thoughts and abnormal emotional experiences which occur around eating, around body image and around body weight. I suppose it's important to note that these aren't just individual preferences that people have. These are pathological illness behaviors that people develop over time, really as a way to cope with kind of stress that they don't have other methods for dealing with. We'd call them maladaptive coping mechanisms, ways that people have learned to cope with stress that they can't really process, can't really manage in another way.
How common are they?
It depends on different age groups and different areas, but I suppose over someone's lifetime, there's probably about kind of a 3-4% chance of developing an eating disorder.
Okay. And the various different strands of that, I mean, the different forms, I suppose, of eating disorders.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're right to identify there's different types and different severities as well. So I guess what people might commonly know as anorexia nervosa would be perhaps the most severe eating disorder. It would be kind of characterized by really excessive restriction of dietary intake and sort of excessive preoccupation and excessive kind of emotional distress around things like body weight and body image. But there's other eating disorders as well. Bulimia nervosa would be one that we would see commonly, where people go through periods of uncontrolled overeating and then sort of a following period where they feel very panicked and they feel an urge to compensate, whether that be might be with vomiting, it might be with over-exercise. And then there's other eating disorders as well, where people might have periods of uncontrolled eating and then they don't compensate afterwards. They find it very distressing, and that would be binge eating disorder. But there's also a range of other kind of less well-described or less well-defined eating disorders, which are characterized by really a spectrum of abnormal eating behaviors or abnormal thoughts and emotional experiences, which cause very high levels of distress, very high levels of dysfunction.
Why does it take so long then to get a diagnosis for this? Because some of the listeners we've spoke to over the past week or so have cited, you know, up to maybe 26 weeks for even an initial assessment. Why is that?
I think one of the things that we aim for in eating disorder treatment is as much as possible early detection and early treatment. Really, I mean, anything under 3 years from initial diagnosis, initial development of symptoms to commencing treatment, we would expect to have a good outcome. Obviously, people can have delays, whether that be not picked up in kind of initial screening, not picked up by families, not picked up by GPs. But we would hope that once it's referred to a specialist team, that they would get seen within short order. Any time that there's a delay in from referral to being seen first, it's a question of resources and it's a question of capacity to see new assessments. Our team in particular, we get over 100 referrals a year. So actually just getting through the turnover of seeing people, you know, there is only so many weeks in a year that people can be seen. So we do get to people as quickly as possible.
And when you say that, that's in the Dublin South and the Wicklow area. Exactly. So you would have an average around 100 referrals to your team a year?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that's the referral pathway. And I presume the diagnosis comes from the likes of yourself. Do you get your diagnosis from a consultant psychiatrist?
Any clinician who is confident and experienced in eating disorders could make that diagnosis. So it may well be a GP is the first person to make the diagnosis, or it might be an emergency department doctor if you've presented first to the emergency department. Like, for example, in our service, most of the referrals that we get are certainly the two biggest referrers are UCD and Trinity Student Health Services. So if you can imagine the catchment area of the student health, it's the group that you'd most expect to have high incidence of eating disorders. So they see them regularly. They're very good at spotting them, and they're very good at sort of recognizing and signposting them on to an appropriate service. But if you're in an area where that experience isn't there, it could be missed or it could be delayed.
So one of the things I think a lot of our listeners have been probably struck by over the past 10 days, Art, when we've been chatting about this on the show and listening to people's experiences and their loved ones, their family experiences, and Paula Crotty from Cared Ireland, who I played a short clip of there a few moments ago, talking about the services that are currently available in Ireland. Is there really only 3 beds to deal with inpatient adults who have an eating disorder in Ireland? Is that all we have?
Yeah, at the moment there's 3 specialist beds. They're in St. Vincent's and they're sort of ring fenced for the service that I work for, Dublin South and Wicklow. So outside of that area, the access to beds becomes a lot more tricky. Technically, people can be admitted to general mental health units, but I think there is a recognition that this is not necessarily the best place for people like that to be cared for. Also, people end up quite frequently admitted through the emergency department to medical beds. And similarly, an acute medical ward is not the ideal location for someone to receive eating disorder treatment. And it typically only happens in extreme situations where it is kind of a question of life or death that the admission has to happen. But it's only a certain sort of treatment around kind of specific acute nutritional rehabilitation rather than long-term eating disorder treatment. And then outside of that, you know, there are plenty of community mental health teams who deal with a wide range of mental illnesses who have good experience in eating disorders as well, but where they feel maybe that they're out of their depth or they don't have the expertise, then it does become even trickier. And the only options really available are for people with private health insurance to access private services. In the absence of private health insurance, the HSE does purchase capacity from different private services to treat people with severe illnesses. And then in rare and extreme cases, people are actually sent abroad to the UK for their treatment under the treatment abroad scheme. And that's also very, you know, it's a very tricky situation for people and families to deal with.
I think the hard bit probably for people to digest is that, you know, in your catchment alone in South Dublin and Wicklow, as you mentioned, like if you're getting on average 100 referrals a year, how we only have resources to provide, you know, to allow for the provision of 3 adult beds. I mean, it just seems like, as Paula Crotty said a little earlier there, the services haven't changed in 20 years.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to remember that the majority of people with eating disorders don't require inpatient admission. It is a real minority, and it's people in really extreme situations. So we have 3 beds for our service. They are at full occupancy. And there is occasionally a waiting list, but the waiting list is not excessively long. And people, when they need an admission, don't tend to have to wait for prolonged periods. Although sometimes people do, while they're waiting, end up as a medical inpatient. So 3 beds is not an unreasonable number of beds for one service to have, but it's the rest of the country that doesn't have access to them that's where the deficit is most felt.
So if you're in Galway or you're in Limerick or you're in Sligo and you're diagnosed with an eating disorder today and God forbid you require inpatient care or treatment, you can't access St. Vincent's. So you might access the adult psychiatric services at Sligo Hospital. Is that where you tend to go then?
Well, Sligo actually does have a specialist team available. So in Sligo particularly, Sligo and Leitrim, you would go to your local specialist eating disorder
okay.
service.
Well, I'm just using it by way of example. But in other parts of the country, then you'll just go to a different area. We won't have ED beds.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I appreciate for you, Art, I mean, I know you're not here as the HSE spokesperson. You're a consultant psychiatrist. You're dealing with patients. You're trying to help them find a pathway to overcome their eating disorder. But it must be very difficult for you and your team. I mean, I'm sure you must feel like you're often hitting your head off a brick wall trying to find services maybe for people or assist people or help people who don't have this provision of care that they require.
Yeah, well, even though it's fairly well established that our beds are for our local area, we do regularly get contact from other services looking to try and get people admitted there. And we do have to explain that we don't have that facility available to us, and we have to signpost them to, as I said, the treatment abroad or private treatment options. It's a worrying situation for anyone working outside of the kind of the area where the access is available.
Yeah. We heard about this national plan back in 2018 for eating disorder services. It was launched by the HSE and they kind of talked about this sort of model of care that they had for the entire country. In your mind, Art, if you were told in the next budget there's an unlimited level of resources for you to deal with eating disorders and to roll out a plan to deal with it, what does best practice look like in terms of managing this?
Well, I think one of the things to think about when reflecting back on the 2018 document where these things were set out, this was the first time Ireland had ever attempted to put any sort of a plan in place around eating disorders. It was a first effort and many of the targets were met. Some of the targets, unfortunately, were not. Back in 2018, the situation, the landscape in Ireland was there was one team for eating disorders, you know, the team in St. Vincent's. There was four people working on that team. There's now 11 teams around the country. There's over 100, you know, dedicated, very kind of
so things have improved.
Working
improved.
Absolutely, you know, the direction of travel is definitely positive, and it's moving towards a position where there's increasing availability of resources. That the sort of equitable access to treatment is gradually spreading across the country, and to go from where we were 7 or 8 years ago to where we are now is a significant achievement for the HSE. The gap in being able to meet the needs of perhaps the most vulnerable, the most severely unwell people, and the lack of inpatient beds is something that, you know, the minister has spoken on a number of times, and the kind of the understanding that the priority perhaps is that every area of the country should be served by a team, and that was the priority, so that when people need an inpatient admission, they have somewhere safe to return to on discharge, because inpatient admission is a very small portion of any services
it's
need.
A community support, isn't it?
And even people who are severe enough to need an inpatient admission, the inpatient portion of their treatment is typically a very, very small portion of their overall treatment. And usually it's for acute stabilization to manage people who are very stuck and need to kind of extra support in progressing their recovery. But the overall goal is that the majority of their recovery then would take place under the service of a specialist team in their local area.
You talked about that gap. So we've 11 teams, is that right? Eating disorder teams around
That's
the
right.
country. Yeah. So the gap, the remaining counties or catchments or regions that don't have that provision of services, where do they go at the moment?
So at the moment, they go to general adult services.
Mental health services.
Exactly.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. So a GP can make a referral to a community mental health team, and that team would then take responsibility for treatment. They take responsibility for recognizing when the severity exceeds their capacity, and would take the lead on if further private expert services are needed, that they would be the ones facilitating that.
Okay. And in your experience, Art, and you know, with the various different patients that you've obviously dealt with and helped over the years, what do you think could help to improve the services nationwide?
Well, I do think that a national strategy for inpatient beds is needed. I think that the original strategy in the model of care has been reviewed and revised, and a submission has gone to Minister Butler during the summer and is currently with the Department of Health to work out cost, work out feasibility. And I think that the development of that over the next couple of years is something which is an essential strategy for managing, you know, what is essentially the most unwell and most vulnerable group of people. And the target of that really is to reduce the kind of development of really severe and long-standing illnesses where people at a sort of a young and vulnerable age in their lives don't have access to treatment, and then they subsequently develop long-standing illnesses which impair them from working, impair them from really engaging with life. So having some sort of way to treat that group of people when they need it in the kind of the right place at the right time. So I think a strategy for how inpatient beds are going to be managed over the next couple of years is something which I'm hopeful will be developed in the near term.
How is it dealing with such vulnerable young people day to day?
I mean, it's very difficult. We have a kind of a range of different people who attend our services. And we also on occasion have to deal with people on an involuntary basis as well. So because sometimes when people have severe illnesses, really their understanding of their circumstances, their ability to exercise good judgment can be significantly impaired, and they may have really no concept or no ability to understand that they're severely unwell. And sometimes a legal order needs to be made for treatment, and that can be really distressing for the patient.
God, for everybody.
You know, what we usually see is after a period of time as an inpatient, people are really grateful for the involuntary treatment, and they recognise that it was essential, and they recognise that their ability to make good decisions for themselves was really impaired. But there can be really, really long weeks or months where really the people are fighting, or their illness is fighting back against treatment, and it can be really, really distressing for them. It can also be really distressing for families who want the best for their son, daughter, wife, husband, whoever it may be, and they witness them really in the throes of the most kind of distress and struggle that people are likely to go through in their lives.
It's the one thing we learned, I think, this week, Art, is that eating disorders doesn't discriminate male, female, all age groups, married, children at home, like it knows no barriers.
Yeah.
So just maybe on a final point for people listening today, and a lot of people have been, I think, following this over the past 10 days or so, because we've heard from such a variety of different people and from the political perspective as well yesterday in terms of how other parties maybe, you know, might propose to do things differently. So that's why we were interested to see from a medical perspective how you guys actually manage and handle all of this. For anybody listening to us today that maybe is going through this, is trying to get an appointment, has a loved one at home or family member at home, what's your advice to them, Artis, at this stage, you know, if they maybe just feel like they're not getting anywhere?
I suppose, like I said at the top of the show, that getting a very kind of early recognition of illness and an early referral to a service is, you know, that is the most important thing. Beyond that, it's probably about advocacy, that if you're in a situation where a doctor isn't sure, or a specialist isn't entirely sure what the next step is, you know, advocating that, you know, that your loved one or yourself needs treatment, and that you advocate for, in the absence of a specialist team in your area or the absence of inpatient beds, that there is a need for inpatient bed to be sourced for you by the HSE, whether that be in a private unit or you know, abroad if it's necessary.
We've heard a lot about the negatives in relation to the services that are out there, but is there anything positive?
As my team has recently relocated, and our new building is being opened in 1 week's time by Minister Butler. So that's you know, a significant improvement in services in our area. And the new building also allows us to fully engage with the overall strategy of the HSE, which is a stepped model of care where people get, you know, outpatient treatment for the majority of their illness. Where things become very severe, they go for an inpatient treatment. But then there's also an in-between ground where there's an alternative to inpatient admission, which is a day program, which is really an intensive alternative to hospitalization, which is actually being launched in our service in 10 days' time. So that's something which, when we're thinking about bed capacity, actually we don't need as many beds if we have acute alternatives to inpatient admission in something like an intensive partial hospitalization day program, which has not yet run in Ireland and is being run for the first time. Another positive development is, I know I mentioned that there's 11 teams in the country at the moment. There's actually 3 teams announced for funding before the end of this year as well. So by the end of this year, there'll be 14 teams in the country.
Listen, we'll leave it there for the moment, and I do appreciate Archie coming into studio to us today. That's Dr. Art Malone, who's a consultant psychiatrist and clinical lead with the HSE Audit Eating Disorder Service in Dublin South, Wicklow and St Vincent's Hospital. One listener's text on this: I also have a 14-year-old daughter at home with an eating disorder. She hasn't eaten food in years. She's just on sips and Scandi shakes, which are supplements for food. She was in hospital lately as well, and the doctor showed her weight. It was up, and now she's struggling again because her weight was just up a small bit. It must be incredibly difficult for the families of people dealing with this, and obviously for people themselves. It must be so, so hard. The email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We wanted to chat to Art Malone today because this is something we've been talking about, as I said, here in Lunchtime Live for the past 10 days, to get a better understanding of the kind of services that are out there for people.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.